Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Well, Alex, we have a pretty established pattern of no matter what else is going on in wrestling, sticking to the show that we're talking about here on the post show. But we have to lead with the news that broke right around the time SmackDown started, which is Vince McMahon has resigned from all positions in TKO / WWE. This is the end. There's no coming back from this by all indications. And it does feel like more so than when he resigned on Twitter and got a press release and a send-off from Stephanie. There's always that feeling of, well, you know, maybe, maybe not. We'll see, probably, but maybe not. And then he came, forced his way back 6 months later. Stephanie resigned. Now, after the lurid, just disgusting details that have come out about his conduct with a woman he hired to be an employee at a vulnerable time in her life and manipulated and it's out there. You can read about it. We're certainly not going to read the explicit details, but it was enough that earlier today, Slim Jim said they were pausing their sponsorship. Who knows what else was going on behind the scenes with network partners, Netflix, who they just signed a $5 billion deal with and announced earlier this week, not to mention Dwayne Johnson, who just got added to the TKO board of directors earlier in the week, and any other kind of pressures they felt. It just felt like it was unsustainable for Vince McMahon to stay on in any kind of position officially with TKO. And it lasted, you know, about 30 some hours between the lawsuit dropping and Vince resigning and word being sent out. No announcement on Raw tonight. They did talk about Netflix. They talked about The Rock. They did not bring up Vince. I don't think we'll hear Vince's name for a very long time on WWE television, which is odd, but I think apropos of the totality of the circumstances. It's a complicated story, and we're already talking a lot about it this week on VIP shows. I did a Wade Keller hotline on it yesterday. Rich Fan and I talked about an hour and a half about it on Everything with Rich and Wade, a special Friday edition earlier this afternoon. That's already posted. And then Todd Martin and I recorded a special edition of The Fix right before SmackDown and talked about it for 45 minutes or an hour, hitting a lot of angles. This was all before he resigned. So that's a whole other aspect of it, although it is just what it is. He's gone. And Now there's some unanswered questions. Who knew what, when, who tolerated what, who looked the other way, what happened to that internal investigation, how did they not know, does Stephanie now return since she resigned shortly after Vince returned? But it is the end of an era and unfortunate circumstances that led to the end of the Vince McMahon era. So, Alex, I throw to you, open-ended, any thoughts on the whirlwind of the last couple of days and the news of Vince being I feel certain he will not be back in any capacity in pro wrestling ever again. Your thoughts, Alex?
No, I actually have more questions for you, and I think I speak for a lot of people because, as you know, and a lot of people that listen know, Patrick and I record on Thursdays. So we were kind of talking about this as it happened and what would happen if he either resigned or got forced out. Do you know how that works with his stock shares? Like, does he still have controlling interest of stock even with the resignation?
I don't know. I think any kind of negotiation that led to him resigning when he did likely included him having some sort of compensation, for lack of a better term, on the fly here to maybe accelerate that. But I don't know yet. The only indication I got from someone in WWE is that there was an understanding by all parties that this was unsustainable. Now, that doesn't mean that Vince didn't said we can make this quick or we can make it difficult, and the quick way is X, Y, and Z, including some things having to do with stock, cashing out, I don't know. So it's an interesting question. And, yeah, I mean, how Vince is going to end up with a lot of money, does he end up having to sell the stock or not? That was not part of the statement issued to employees by Nick Khan today.
Well, the other part of it from the financial side is how many other people in a similar situation, if there are any, also want to have their NDAs rescinded, and how much of that money that he gained does he have to pay out?
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird way to look at it, but that there's that possibility looming also, because unfortunately, I find it difficult to believe that this one woman is the only victim, and I fear it's merely the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, there's so many settlements out there. You know, finally, I know Donald Trump was headlines, made headlines today with the $83 million verdict against him in a civil trial for raping E. Jean Carroll. And now we have Vince McMahon making CNN headline news. Also, it was the final story on the block of news that they did opposite of SmackDown, but they showed images of Vince McMahon and said that he resigned amidst sex trafficking allegations. Not a glorious end to somebody who spent the last 40 years building a business that he took over from his dad, essentially, expanded WWF nationally, and sat in a courtroom facing potential prison time on felony charges from the federal government relating to steroids. I was front row for from jury selection to closing arguments for that trial. And he was put at risk then. And then Ted Turner and Nitro came on, and he felt very vulnerable for a while during that time period, and called me semi-regularly to vent about Ted Turner and lament the unfair business practices that he thought Ted Turner was using against him by using money from other parts of his empire to try to put his family business under. He used a lot of those same tactics before Ted Turner and that whole money war, and afterwards with competitors. So certainly hypocrisy and not a real sympathetic ear on my part during those times. But he overcame, and he beat WCW Nitro, drove WCW essentially out of business, purchased the scraps that were left over after Nitro and Thunder were canceled, and then went public, failed in virtually every enterprise he tried afterwards, from the XFL to the World Nightclub to a record label, just as that industry was changing to streaming. But he sold WWE and was part of that sale after forcing his return a year ago, and was there sort of, as I say, at the bottom of the ninth in Game 7 of his World Series, which was cashing out for the big prize, this huge, gigantic payout. And selling it and becoming the true billionaire he wanted to be. He always wanted to be bigger than Ted Turner and bigger than a lot of people. And he had that moment, and it didn't last long. And now he goes down with a reputation that I don't think he's going to overcome. I think Todd Martin and I were talking about this earlier on the VIP podcast, The Fix. You know, is Vince McMahon one of those celebrities whose exit from the public sphere is so shameful and scandal-ridden that is what he's known for more than his contributions beforehand, i.e. Harvey Weinstein, that kind of thing? Is that his reputation? Is it like O.J. Simpson, for instance, or is it more like Brett Favre? Well, some things happened that are, you know, hurt his reputation, but he's still primarily, I think by most people, thought of as a quarterback, not for the scandals he was involved in afterwards with charities and such. I think Vince goes down as someone who's going to remember for this, what we just learned in the past 2 days in that lawsuit. But we'll see. You know, that it's just going to take time. I can't summarize Vince McMahon's career here in a 10-minute segment at the start of a SmackDown post-show, but I am reflecting a bit on it because it does feel like there's a sense of finality to it, and we certainly, as the show goes on, welcome our callers and emailers to contribute their thoughts on that, in addition to a rather paint-by-numbers episode of SmackDown going into the Rumble, which we will, of course, also analyze. Alex, anything else you want to add about this? Are you surprised at how this all went down? Any reflections?
I'm surprised with the actual graphic nature of it. Like, I'm not going to act like I thought Vince was like this stand-up guy my whole life. Like, I never thought that. But I did not think that when these details finally came out, because, I mean, a year and a half ago, we knew this was coming. It was more of a matter of, like, how long it was going to take more than anything else.
Yeah.
But I never anticipated the things that I read yesterday. And that's the best way I can put it.
Yeah.
And
I mean, can you ever look at Vince McMahon when you're watching back old WWE matches, when you're reading about the history of WWE, when you're reading back issues of Pros and Torch for your podcast and talking about them? Like, it feels like every time you think about Vince McMahon, it's not "Welcome to WrestleMania." It's not Mick Foley and Steve Austin interacting with him during the peak period of the Mr. McMahon era. It's this, and it sucks. I mean, not for him. He brought this on, but like, it just, the totality of his work and his contributions, rightfully so, is now overshadowed by what this lawsuit revealed about him. And not everything is proven, but there are text messages that I assume lawyers did due diligence to validate. That's enough to stain and besmirch how you feel about him. And he's gotten sort of, you know, there's been this sense of, as he's aged, some of the positive traits were diminishing and some of the creepy old man aspects of him were taking over. And, you know, he does seem in certain ways to be a shell of his former self. And that's not just me observing from afar, but it's talking to people who've been around him and talking to people who've been around him. But it kind of sucks that that's just there now. It's like when you watch an old Miramax movie and you see, you know, a Weinstein movie production, you're like, ah, God, you know, if this is a good movie, now I got to think about him first.
Yeah, and that's – it's one of those things, and you just hit on it. Again, even though I never really thought he was like Mr. Stand-Up Guy, I do think – that as time wore on, he became crazier and crazier. And what's interesting, especially with what gets posted on the Torch, is that one of my favorite things to listen to is the Bruce Mitchell audio shows from 18 years ago. And I had like just gotten back into the product at that point, and I actually subscribed to the Torch for the first time back then. So listening to those is like really fun because I like that time period. But
yeah,
one of the things that's been talked about a lot by you and Bruce on those shows is the increasing volatility of McMahon and his personality literally changing in front of people. And that's when the cracks in the armor first started to show. So it's interesting to look at from that standpoint, because maybe as the money grew and the company grew and presumably his ego grew, this side of his personality grew as well. So it could be one of those things where, you know, you watch WrestleMania 3, maybe in 1987, Vince is a sick pervert, but not this much of a sick pervert.
Right.
So that almost plays into it too, because you start to wonder if this guy's just been slowly losing his mind over the last 15 to 20 years.
Yeah, you go back to Rita Chatterton, predates some of this. And I mean, yeah, no, you're right. I mean, the timetable of him getting more volatile and erratic and temperamental and short-fused absolutely was coming on 20 years ago. And those, you know, those 18 years ago Bruce Mitchell audio shows are just a graduate course in contemporary wrestling coverage of that era. And it's, you know, it's on our VIP podcast feed. We post all our 18 years ago shows chronologically for our VIP members. And I'm glad you're listening back to them, and I do too. And Vince McMahon has been a fascinating person, and it does feel like now it is time to assess what happened to him. And, you know, and it's a little bit shorthand, you know, to say that the good traits of him had started to fade over the last two decades, and the you know, and this isn't fetish shaming, but the creepiness combined with his power, combined with the unchecked nature of his power and the way that he abused that power is the dominant story right now about him. I mean, I can talk about what, you know, the federal trial with steroids and the battling Ted Turner and the Monday Night War era and going public and the success of WWE and selling it. But the story about Vince McMahon, the primary story now is what happened. And like you just said, was that always him? And it got a lot worse. Was it always him? But as he gained more power and got older, he got more reckless. Is it, you know, a degradation of his ability to curb his impulses? Were there enablers who felt at his mercy? I mean, all that stuff is going to be written about. There's going to be books. There's going to be documentaries. There's going to be articles and podcasts about it. And but it was a sad trajectory that he has been on for a while. But I don't know that this part of him wasn't always there once he gained power and fame and influence over people. I mean, and you know, we talked about it on Everything with Rich and Wade, and then the Fix with Todd and me earlier. You know, getting into this, and you know, Todd was talking about, you know, the on-air clues have been there with Vince all along. He liked being a bully, whether it was Howard Finkel, whether it was Trish Stratus. There's these famous, you know, he said his favorite thing is someone getting shoved into a pool. He was a bully, and that was always there. But to have this woman at a vulnerable time in her life be hired for the seemingly, by all evidence, exclusive desire to make her essentially a sex toy, a sex slave, a sex... I mean, she had some autonomy at some point, but it felt sort of like, I've used the analogy of the John Grisham novel, The Firm, almost designed to put her in a position where, because of where she was at her life when Vince hired her, and then how they gave her, how they positioned her in the company and what she was degraded into thinking that she was worth it. It's disturbing, you know, the story, and there's still more to be told, I'm sure, about this. Yeah, it's so hard to I can't imagine that the Vince that I knew didn't have something wrong with him that led to him being able to be this way when he was older, but those guardrails were gone as he got older. And again, he's put a lot of stuff into his body over the years, and he's, you know, just physically and mentally changed in recent years, and it did seem to accelerate into something quite a bit worse. But like I said, there's a lot more stories to be told, and I think people are going to feel like more willing to speak freely about this. And if there were enablers and people looking the other way and people complicit in this, it's not over. Because I don't think this was just Vince secretly doing something in his condo on off hours. This was something going on that you know, people had to have a hunch of. Now, I don't know to what degree they thought so, but you know, the text messages, and if the NDA is completely removed, we're going to learn a lot more, Alex.
Oh no, there is a large group of people that knew about this, in my opinion, and I think at least 4 to 5 of them are major names, both on the wrestler side and in the front office, that we've all heard or read or listened to. I definitely think there's quite a contingent. Brought up Stephanie earlier. I don't think she comes back. I think we have a much larger look into why she stepped down in the first place. Mm-hmm. I would imagine that her and by extension, Paul Levesque probably had access to some of this when the investigation took place, because I would imagine part of this came up, or at some point somebody has seen Vince's phone or something.
Right.
And to avoid...
He was served a search warrant there. I mean, with a grand jury investigation that we still don't know if it's ongoing. There still could be criminal charges for all we know at this point.
That's what I mean, is I'm sure that Stephanie and Levesque are more in the know than we think. I'm not going out and saying they were complicit, but
they might not have known in 2022, but they might have known in 2023. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
I do, however, like I said, that there are certain people who have worked there for a very long time who are complicit. And there's like two names that popped in my head immediately, like that are well connected to this. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with those couple of people. But anyway,
yeah.
On the resignation front, do you think, and maybe it was just impossible to do this, because I would get if that's the case, but do you think it makes TKO look bad that they did not remove him and instead he resigned himself? Or do you think it doesn't matter?
I think people will see it for what it is regardless. I think it's pretty standard for powerful, famous people to be given an opportunity to quickly tender their resignation. And people know what that means, which is you were forced out. But it's the last bit of grace that he is afforded, which is, if you want to frame this as you recognizing reality and turning in your resignation, then he was given that courtesy. And that could have been, you know, and I think it is the case with, you know, when politicians resign to spend more time with their family. Sometimes it's, all right, if you do this quick and easy, make it easy for everybody, then it can be under those circumstances. But in the end, I mean, that's not going to be – there's going to be no CNN report that makes this seem more like less of a scandal because Vince, you know, had the grace to, quote, resign rather than be forced out. And, I think people see it for what it is, which is he had no choice.
Oh, no, I agree. I just wonder – like with what we just talked about where like, and you mentioned it on something today that Nick Khan was just on something and, you know, was
Pat McAfee show. Yeah. Just joshing around about Vince stories.
Yeah.
Tuesday.
And yeah. And like that's the thing is if they had physically removed him, like if they had come out and said, we're doing everything in our power to solve this, you know, whatever the language is. Do you think that absolves some of that? And we're not sitting here wondering how complicit some of these people were, because that's going to come up and that could shake the actual company. Like the Slim Jim thing is what it is. And that could just be, you know, them pulling out due to timing more than anything else.
Yep.
And they could be back for, you know, WrestleMania for all we know. As far as us looking at executives in this company, that's what makes me wonder if TKO pulling him out would have been better. But I mean, this is the same, you know, Ari Emanuel and all that kind of stuff. It was the same with the Dana White thing and nobody forgot about it, but that's basically under the rug now. Well, I mean, that's nowhere near the level of this, but still.
Yeah, CNN.com, and I don't know where it was issued. I haven't checked my email to see if I got anything, but it looks like he did issue a statement regarding his resignation. I was thinking that WWE.com would not post this, and I'm just doing a quick check of the corporate section in the press release area here. Yeah, no, the last thing that they posted is a Netflix announcement. And but here's his statement. Out of respect for the WWE universe, the extraordinary TKO business and its board members and shareholders, partners and constituents, and all of the employees and capital S superstars who helped make WWE into the global leader it is today, I've decided to resign from my executive chairmanship and the TKO board of directors effective immediately. The implication being out of respect for the false allegations made against me and, as he said in a previous statement, incidents that he denies happened and been grossly exaggerated and taken out of context, he will be defending himself. But because it's such a controversy and they could lose sponsors over it, out of respect for all of that, he will resign. No admitting fault here. No contrition. No apology. No introspection. Now, that might be out of self-preservation, both financially and just from a freedom standpoint, if there's an criminal investigation going on. But that's what we have from him at this point.
Yeah, he might not be able to do some of that. And, I mean, let's be honest, he wouldn't have anyway.
Oh, I know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. Anything else you want to add before we pivot here?
No. No, we'll end up further down this rabbit hole.
Yes. Yep. And like I said, we welcome caller input. So let's pause and just introduce ourselves, and then we'll shift to phone calls, and we'll definitely talk SmackDown here, of course, and Royal Rumble hype. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, January 26th. 2024. I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, the long-running weekly paper copy newsletter with over 1,800 copies published, and the website pwtorch.com, launched in 1999, and the host of various podcasts, including free ones like this one, the Wade Keller Post Show, and the Wade Keller Podcast, featuring most prominently our weekly flagship edition, which this week included Rich Fan and I talking at length about the Netflix WWE deal, which was going to be the top story of the week, no longer is. And then a host of various VIP podcasts, and such as the aforementioned Everything with Rich and Wade and The Fix with Todd Martin and the Wade Keller Hotlines. And tomorrow night after the Royal Rumble, we'll have a Royal Rumble post-show roundtable exclusively for VIP members. Greg Parks will also be hosting Wrestling Night in America with Brandon LeClaire. That'll be live streamed after the Rumble. So look to my report at pwtorch.com for a link to the Rumble post show. So you can listen live, participate with calls, just like on this show. It's a different homepage. It's a different website because it's the Daily Cast, not the Wade Keller Show. So be sure to seek out the link or go to pwtorchdailycast.com. to find the link to the live stream tomorrow night. But you can listen live and then download it later, of course. And if you're a VIP member, you can listen to the roundtable that I'll be hosting tomorrow night after the Rumble for our VIP members who make everything we do possible. The other voice you hear tonight is Alex McDonald. It's been forever, Alex, it feels like. It's great to have you back. I didn't notice on Skype how long it had been since I had last brought your name up and dialed it. Maybe you know, but good to have you back. I know the holiday season was very busy. You've been still submitting your SmackDown reports on pwtorch.com almost every Friday, and also recording your show with Patrick, looking back 30 years ago at Pro Wrestling Torch newsletters on the Daily Cast lineup. But good to talk to you again, and what a Friday you chose.
Oh, no kidding, right? it's funny, the reason I said yes was because today is actually the 21-year anniversary of the Bucks winning their first Super Bowl, so I thought it would be a good time to come on. I didn't know I would get caught in the crosshairs of yet another Vince McMahon controversy, scandal, whatever you want to call it, and a ho-hum episode of SmackDown, but it's fine. Yeah. You brought up the Netflix deal, and on the positive side, that's, like, really exciting.
Yeah.
If you're looking for, like, some positive stuff with this company, that's, like, a groundbreaking, super positive thing that came out of this week. I mean, you guys can talk about the Rock thing all you want. I don't really care, and I don't think that matters that much in the grand scheme. But that Netflix thing could be huge, and I don't think a lot of people really understand the magnitude of it, but that could be the first step into eventually Netflix getting a deal with other live sports,
yeah,
like, you know, the NBA. So it's a weird thing, but there could be, like, some big-time ramifications from it down the road with deals that 'll end up dwarfing what WWE signed for. But it's just interesting. It's interesting that that's their first venture into full-time live programming. And if it goes well, who knows where it could lead.
Absolutely. And again, I encourage people to check out the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. Rich Fan and I talked for hour and a half, just about everything you just talked about, Alex, and more. But yes, this is it. It was just a matter of time, you know, before a streaming service. And we see it with Peacock, with NFL games. You know, I mean, eventually streaming service, because if you got in on the early side of streaming, especially with Netflix, it's like it was this static, like, frozen in place page you would go to, and you would just sort through the movie you wanted to watch. And then, you know, the screen became kind of active, you know, years ago, and it was little previews automatically playing. And I was like, well, this feels intrusive and loud. Let me just browse quietly. And now I can't live without it. Now anybody who doesn't do that, you know, Amazon Prime doesn't do it. I'm like, I don't even know where to go. You got to tell me what I'm supposed to watch, or give me little previews and let me listen to things. So it got a little more sophisticated and dynamic on the homepage. And then suddenly it started, well, not suddenly, but like, then you're like, hey, people have fast enough internet now. There's not going to be buffering and all that stuff that WWE Network even encountered initially. They can do live stuff, and this is going to be a hub of entertainment in a different way than cable has been, but ultimately, you know, rather similar because of the option to do live stuff. And I mean, the fact that Netflix is going to be the home for everything outside of the United States, basically WWE branded, is going to be a gateway to Netflix and other streaming services bidding for other things, whether the NFL has their own streaming service completely separate or just goes with someone else. It does seem to be, you know, the future. There'll likely still be broadcast channels with antennas so people can get certain things without paying for it. But, you know, the bundling of a bunch of channels you don't watch on cable is going away. I called it, though. You're not going to save money by if the bundling of cable goes away, because you're going to start having to pay. The people who like ESPN are going to have to pay for ESPN, whether it's part of a cable bundle or not. It used to be subsidized by all the people who didn't watch ESPN who still had cable. So now everyone's just sort of paying directly for what they want with fewer channels, but at least you have the option to pick and choose and pay for what you want and not have it all bundled with a catch-all price. But that's you know, the good and bad of the technology. For WWE, it's sports, it's the next chapter, it's the next wave, Alex. And it's, we're kind of like you said, WWE is, as Vince McMahon took pride in, you know, at the forefront of different things, you know, not always first, but the first to bring it to the next level, you know, pay-per-view, for instance, having a standalone network for your product, and on. And those are things he was proud of, but you know what, who cares what Vince was proud of given who he turned into and who maybe he's always been.
Yeah. And they really have been, whether you go back to like VHS tapes or even the move to DVD or the original WWE Network, again, like you said, they may not have been the first, but they were always like right at the cusp of media technology and trying out those new things. So it makes sense, even under new leadership, modified leadership, whatever you want to call it, that they would remain that way. So it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it does. All right, so we invite you to call and participate in our conversation tonight. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. If you'd like to be on the program, we'd like to hear from you. And we can talk SmackDown. We also are opening things up to talk Vince McMahon, so you can talk either or both. And you can also email us if you prefer that, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. Let's begin our calls here. We had a bunch of people on hold, and we will start here with Mark from Westchester, New York. Mark, welcome to the show. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, Wade, how are you? Alex, good to talk to you. So I've started this thing where I get home from work and I put my phone down. So I did not know about the Vince thing until you guys mentioned it. So yeah. It's always good to, you know, hear good stuff, or not good stuff, but hear news from the Torch and be surprised by that. So, given what has been told, have you heard anything about like Brock Lesnar and his potential ramifications or anything about Brock since what came out yesterday?
No, and it's sort of the you know, B story that because everything, you know, was rightfully focused around you know, Vince McMahon and the allegations against him. Given his position, but it's absolutely part of the conversation. Brock Lesnar in the lawsuit. It's hard to summarize exactly on a show like this what he was offered, what he accepted, what he may have intended to do and then ended up not doing with in the totality of the situation. But I think if he was going to be part of the Royal Rumble tomorrow night, without question, that at least that has been revisited by Brock and the powers in WWE to decide, is this really the right time? The question is, did Lesnar know when he was offered custom videos by Vince McMahon of Janelle Grant fulfilling Brock's sexual video requests? Did he know the context in which they were being offered? And if he didn't, is that still an excuse? Does it make it much better if he didn't, but he was still willing to go with it? I gave proper time and nuance to this in the podcast I recorded earlier today with Rich and Todd. But to me, I just think if Brock shows up at the Rumble tomorrow night, it's a distraction. There's a chance that it's a difficult situation for everybody for a variety of reasons, including Brock. And he might be dealing with other stuff at home right now too, that you know, kind of might limit his travel his travel opportunities depending on that context, which I know nothing about. Alex, what do you think about what you've read and what you think about me kind of framing that as maybe we don't know enough to know the level of scandal that Lesnar is gonna face coming out of this?
I don't know what he's going to face coming out of it because he's not named as a defendant, and I do think that is an important part of this.
Yeah.
John Laurinaitis is named as a defendant. Yeah. Brock is not. Only reason we know who he is because somebody cleverly worded the description of him so that it could only be one possible person.
And that's, exactly, yes.
That's really the only reason we know who it is. So I don't know what he'll face as far as legal ramifications go, but to the point about the Royal Rumble, yeah, there is a negative percent chance of him being at the Rumble tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like if that was on the table 24 hours ago, or it was the plan, or he had a plane ticket to Tampa, yeah, he ain't going.
No.
Under
Vince McMahon, I would have doubt. Given what has happened with Vince McMahon out of power and everything going on, I mean, you're right. I mean, this new WWE needs to rebuild faith with fans that this brand is safe and cleaner and more policed, more well-regulated, more decent than under Vince McMahon. And the day after Vince resigns, bringing Brock Lesnar in to try to get a big pop and having him eliminate people in the Royal Rumble or just show up and stare someone down. I mean, you can't do that. And I don't think they will.
No. If Vince was still in charge, Brock would have showed up with a cell phone and everything else, and they would have taunted the entire situation. But
yep.
No, I don't think he'll be there. And any plan, you know, we've all heard the Gunter Brock speculation. I think all that's out the window. I guess they got luckier than we thought with the Seth injury, but you know, and him being able to be back, because obviously I think the Brock thing. Maybe by WrestleMania things calm down and he's back or he gets absolved, but legal situations take a hell of a lot longer than that. So I find it hard to believe that'll be the case. So I would scratch Lesnar off of your bingo cards, and I would not put money on that for tomorrow as far as a surprise goes.
Yep.
Unfortunately, due to this situation and the company being pushed in a different direction, it might also limit what could have been a couple of other surprises with rumored free agents, just as things got moved to the back burner. I'm not saying that that's 1,000% true, but it's definitely a possibility.
Yeah. All right, Mark, back to you. Follow up on that or anything else?
Just based on, like I said, I know that this happened as I watched SmackDown, but I'm just glad that there wasn't a McMahon or a Levesque for that matter on screen saying that they were praising, you know, McMahon for retiring and stepping down and that happening again.
Yeah.
But,
that was not a great moment for Stephanie doing that, but it was also telling how pithy it was, and somewhat revealing in retrospect. When she resigned after Vince, forced his way back, there were issues there and concerns there on Stephanie's part, even going back to that point. But it would have been very tone deaf for any kind of celebratory tribute of Vince McMahon. It's they're already dealing with trying to re-mainstream Hulk Hogan right now. They don't need to seem like they're trying to give Vince a parachute or soft landing with what came out. I mean, the feedback from wrestlers who I know, I mean, they're grossed out, they're devastated, they're angry. Especially people who admired Vince and knew the other aspect of him, the leader and the genius mind in many ways. They're mourning that right now. And there were always concerns. People heard stories. I mean, a wrestler texted me during SmackDown talking about a story he heard about Vince he didn't want to believe. Years ago he heard it, and now he totally believes it. And he's having to recalibrate all the rumors that he was like, wow, could it really be that? And then you read this and you see the text messages and you go, the rumors are probably largely true. This is somebody who had bad tendencies that got worse over time. Many of them are public, and many of them we saw. The Vince McMahon reacting to Bob Costas on the HBO show and throwing papers in the air and storming off. I mean, we've seen with our own eyes aspects of Vince McMahon that were not the more, controlled, dignified, genius, charismatic promoter who loved to perform and loved to bring smiles to fans' faces. So there's a lot of recalibration going on. Mark?
Yeah. So like I said, I did not know about the Vince thing before I called. So, knowing everything that I know now, I feel so bad for Stephanie. And now I see why she may have stepped down, knowing what she may know now. And being the daughter of the person who did this,
her mom,
it's just terrible.
Stephanie's
for her.
Mom, and I'm not saying
I know.
That.
Yeah, yeah, that, not here, even mention Stephanie's mom. It's just being the daughter of the person who did these things, knowing that her mother, it's a terrible situation,
I mean, Stephanie isn't just Vince's daughter; he's Linda's daughter. She's Linda's daughter.
Yeah.
And, the things that Vince has done to shame the family, the legacy of the McMahons and hurt Linda, obviously are going to be something that affects Shane and Stephanie. And, I don't claim to know anywhere close to all the necessary key dynamics in that family. But it seems clear to me that Stephanie is not in a good place when it comes to how her father has acted and what we know about him.
Yeah. Yeah. So switching back to SmackDown, because, it's SmackDown.
Yeah, of course.
So today was the second Hulk Hogan promo in a row. I want you to tell me that he's not going to show up in the Royal Rumble tomorrow. Wade, please. Please tell me
he won't be in the match. WWE knows better than to put somebody who's said the racist things he said multiple times to his son on recordings, and with the boos that he has received in the past. I mean, they can try to re-mainstream him a little bit, and he can drop a little clue of never say never when it comes to entering the Rumble, but he's too old, too brittle. The hip, the back, there's no way he's going to enter that ring and take a bump. Alex, do you agree, or do you have less hopeful base certitude than I do?
There's a better chance that Hogan's in the Rumble than Brock.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
I agree.
Are you at 1% with Hogan, 10%, 0%, 0.1?
There's a distinct chance. The other thing, too, is if they put him in and have, Lashley kick his ass and just dump him out, that'd be funny. I'd be cool with that.
Yeah. Part of me just doesn't want Hogan to get any more paydays. I just think the things he said about black people are so vile. I just don't want WWE. I don't want any money that fans have paid to Peacock or for tickets to the Rumble to go in Hogan's pocket. I mean, I don't think Hogan has to be canceled from all of society. It doesn't mean people should – it's up to people if they want to throw fruit at him in the streets or not. But he can go earn a living, not acting like he's somebody to be admired or pay tribute to or celebrated. there are memories. I don't think he should be wiped from history on WWE Network, you know, type footage. But I don't think he should be celebrated or propped up or revalidated. And that's what WWE is doing right now. And I think they should stop where they are and not take it any further. I just think there comes a point where you disqualify yourself from being put on television with a major entertainment entity like WWE and acting like everything's okay.
Oh, no, I completely agree. I mean, especially – and what he said was bad enough, but the speech to the locker room that he gave after made the situation 10 times worse, because the guy just has no self-awareness, which you can hear on my show every week when we talk about Hulk Hogan. But no, I don't think he'll actually be in. I just wouldn't put it past him. And unfortunately, the video package he was in tonight, he didn't show up and do that for free because, you know, it's Hogan. And he's never met a charity he couldn't squeeze some money out of. So it's one of those things where the guy's already getting paydays, so it wouldn't shock me. But no, I don't think so. I will say, though, I would be less shocked to see Hogan than, like I said, Brock or some of the other names that have been bandied about the last couple days. Two of them that I heard today were Okada and MJF. Like, I think Hogan is more likely than all of those people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. I am I'm afraid I might agree with you, but I think the odds of all four are pretty low. Yeah. All right. I'm just processing. where all the low single-digit odds fall in my order here. Mark, anything else you want to bring up?
On a positive note, I really enjoyed the Bayley video package, and I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts about it.
Yeah, yeah. Alex, what'd you think of that?
So I was thrown off a little bit at first when they showed the Performance Center. I thought they were going to kind of babyface the thing and show, like, her journey back, like Triple H-esque. And I even Cody is a more recent example. I should have used that because that was like
Seth back in the day.
Yeah,
7 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I thought that was the direction they were going. And then they turned it into her story. But I thought that would have been a good opportunity to kind of hype people for the babyface turn.
Mm-hmm.
With that said, though, Bayley and Bianca are probably my favorite women on the roster. So I always like what she does, but I do not care for the post crowds being back, and she just feels this absolute need to heckle the crowd at every small opportunity. So I really enjoy her in these video packages, and they did one with Damage Control like a month ago. And I know Todd made fun of it, and I listened to it. I was like, I thought it was good, because I think Bayley is better in that pre-taped setting, because she's not pausing what she's doing to heckle some fat guy in the third row for absolutely no reason.
Mm-hmm.
Like, during the pandemic, when the only people there were Cole and Graves, and she would do that, it was fine because it fit. Like, she could hear them, and, you know, it fit. But now it's just so contrived, and it's just for no reason. So to me, when you eliminate that aspect, she's just so much better.
I agree with that. And it's weird. You know, some people are just better in different in one setting compared to another. And yeah, it did seem like this was almost laying the foundation at first for some sort of babyface turn. And no, it was just Bayley telling her story. And it was like, you know, they're leaning into the pandemic era a bit. And then, but, you know, by the end, you're just like, she's being kind of self-centered and whiny. But I still think ultimately, her destination is to land as a babyface and all this. So I think it had sort of there's mixed intentions with that. And they don't want to show their hand entirely. But they want to portray her as this mastermind who's trying to fulfill this larger goal. And, where that next chapter is, which could be, it could be soon, or they might stretch it out more. But I think this video will fall into place a little bit more once we kind of see how they're going to tell the story of what goes on with her and Damage Control. Mark, back to you. Any follow-up at all on that?
No, just the last thing we'll leave you with is that, like, R-Truth is national treasure. If he was up for the Hall of Fame this year, I would say 1,000% he should be in it. Like, just he's comedic gold, and I appreciate every second he is on WWE television. And with that, I bid you guys adieu, and thank you for having my call, and good night.
Great hearing from Mark. Thank you. Great topic. All right, our number is 347-215-8558. If you want to talk some SmackDown, Royal Rumble, or Vince McMahon's resignation with us, give us a call, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. As Deke from Michigan did. Deke, it's been a while. Welcome. What's on your mind tonight?
What's going on, guys?
Talking wrestling.
Oh, yeah. Well, good to hear. Yeah, I think you guys are exactly right. There's not going to be any Hogan, but I would be more surprised by Brock. I would definitely be more surprised by Brock. I had a question for you. The Sports Illustrated reports that came out the last couple of days, Wade, you know, the first time I was so shocked about the fact that they were so matter of fact. This will be the card that's coming up. And it was interesting to me, the Gunther piece of it, Gunther getting the match against Seth. Now that it's been since reneged a little bit, he said he was kind of worked over on that report. But without Brock in the picture, it makes more sense for Gunther to fight Seth now, right? So I don't know if that's really as much of an errorist report as maybe we all thought it was at first. Just maybe your thoughts on that, because then who does Gunther fight if he's not fighting Brock at WrestleMania? What do you do with him? And if Seth is okay for the next little while to get through, maybe he does have to have surgery after WrestleMania. Is that a way to get the belt off Seth then? It could, you know, with all the controversy, could that original report be right by having Gunther fighting Seth?
Well, insert my obligatory rant about people chasing click revenue and spoiling or thinking they're spoiling things by revealing the end of a movie right as you're buying a ticket to go to the theater. I just think it's bullshit. I don't think that's journalism. Certainly not in headline format, and you know, you should give people tons of warning, and a lot of people do and a lot of people don't, but I don't see merit in that, and things change. People are given misinformation. Obviously, there's been a lot of mostly I just think it's show off reporting. I mean, I just think it's someone going, hey, I'm gonna be the first to tell you what the ending of this TV series that you're in episode 9 of and the season finale is next week, and I'm gonna tell you what happens so that I can impress my boss with clicks and or, you know, make ad money. I just think we're in an era that's just silly, and people shouldn't support. Well, people should choose whether they want to support people who take away the joy of just watching something play out. So that said, I don't know. But my inclination is Gunther's not winning. And I think it's going to be something with CM Punk and Drew and Seth in a triple threat. But I could be wrong. And I have access to ask people who know, and I never do, because I don't want to know. And I don't think it's easy to evaluate a movie when you know the ending before you watch the movie, if you're a movie critic, or you don't, you know, read the script before you go see the movie. Obviously, it's different if you know the ending because it's based on, you know, a famous book or something like that. But nevertheless, rant over on that. So Gunther is phenomenal. And if they fast-track him to being a world champion heel, then great. And maybe it ends up being Punk and Drew one-on-one and Seth and Gunther one-on-one. I don't know with Seth's leg if they want to depend on him being able to have a full-fledged one-on-one match, but maybe Gunther's somebody who the story of the match, if Seth isn't recovered enough to have a typical Seth match, Gunther would just go after his leg and it would, you know, be maybe not even headline a night because it wouldn't be much of a match if they have to protect Seth and have Gunther just kind of take him down and beat him up. But I saw what happened between Seth and Gunther earlier this week as a red herring and a great one, just like Heyman's speech to Jimmy Uso about winning the Rumble and beating Seth. You want a lot of pieces in place. I largely ignored and do my best to ignore spoiler reports because I don't find them reliable and I don't find them helpful. And I don't see any merit in trying to beat people to the punch on that stuff. Alex, your thoughts?
To the Sports Illustrated report, I was really conflicted because I prefer what they laid out.
Yeah.
But I called from a mile away that guy got worked and fell for it.
Mm-hmm.
I pretty much figured that immediately. If you've been around wrestling journalism over the last 20 years, there's certain people who have stuck around and others who have not, and it's pretty quick and easy to tell who's reputable and who isn't, and that's why spending your time arguing with people on Reddit who don't have reputable sources is a complete waste of time. But anyway, moving on from that, as far as Gunther goes, I prefer it, and my favorite idea when we thought Seth was out, I think it was Rich. He just brought up just do a match on Raw and have Gunther just beat him,
mm-hmm.
and then relinquish the Intercontinental title and then run with Gunther for a little bit. I'm all for that, but I do not think he'll win the Rumble. And I don't think he'll win the Chamber, and I don't think he'll be involved in that title picture at Mania. He'll defend the IC title against somebody. Maybe it'll be a little bit further down the card than it would have been had it been Brock. But they will figure something out. Hopefully it's not something ridiculously stupid like Omos or something like that. But they'll figure out something for him to do. And what's funny is we actually – it would be a little weird with the heel face dynamic, but if him and Drew end up being the leftover parts, we could get something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And if something weird happens again, like a leftover parts situation, you could be looking at like Jey Uso or Sami Zayn or something.
Yeah.
So they'll find something for Gunther. I would not be concerned about that. And it'll be compelling. He's great. He's the next. Him and Solo Sikoa are the two heels they're going to build this company around. I wouldn't be concerned on that front. And on top of that, I think he'll be champion in 2023 or 2024, I'm sorry, but probably closer to that pay-per-view that happens to be in Berlin. Just how the calendar works out.
Yeah. Yep. Deke, anything you want to follow up on there?
Oh, no, you guys are great, and I just thought it was very interesting. I kind of thought he was wrong as well. I just thought, though, it was very interesting the way this entire week has ended up playing out. It's like, huh, maybe he did know something, that kind of thing, because if you got to now, all right, what does Gunther do? What does he do? Or the other end of that would be, what does Cody do? You know, and I think that's where – it does make somewhat sense with what that article said was, okay, well, now you have Cody and Punk. At least that is still a big match. Unless Roman's losing tomorrow. Unless, you know, Randy Orton is going to beat Roman somehow tomorrow. Then you have Roman Rock and you have Orton against Cody, which would make sense given their history. But no, that was it, guys. Yeah. I just thought that whole dynamic – it's goofy, but I like it because this is the first time in a long time we don't have a freaking clue what's going to happen tomorrow. Yep. I won't be shocked by any of those top four guys winning the Rumble, you know. And when's the last time we had four dudes? Usually it's one, maybe two guys. This year it's four. So I'm cool with that. I think that's pretty good. So I'm excited for tomorrow.
I am too. I think the possibilities that – fans watching the WWE product, that the stories that WWE has given the fans watching the WWE product gives them a reason, if they're watching at home, to believe in a number of possible paths between now and WrestleMania. And there are so many years where there was a real high certitude about what the top matches are going to be, who's going to win the Rumble, who's going to win the Chamber. One world title or two, you know, changes the dynamic a little bit in terms of the possibilities. But there are a list of options, and I think some fans are going to talk themselves into other ones. You know, I mean, even just the story of Jimmy getting a pep talk, it adds a little more relevance to what happens with Jimmy. WWE doesn't want to be ridiculous and you know, have a bunch of people, you know, Chad Gable cutting promos about this being his year. You know, that's silly. People know WrestleMania is not going to headline with somebody who can't at least, you know, headline or co-headline one of the nights. But Drew and Cody and Punk and Lesnar, you know, obviously was being talked about. Gunther, a late top entry in people's minds as a possibility. You throw in the Raw curveball. You throw in the Seth knee injury curveball. And it really opens up a whole array of paths. Alex, do you have one path that you are committed to that you think they're going on? Do you have two or three that you intrigue you or that you think are possibilities for the men's Rumble scenarios leading to WrestleMania?
I think there's three. I think they're all Raw based. I don't think there's a chance there's a SmackDown guy that wins because I think they took the only guy that really could have and moved him out. Because he's in the four-way. Actually, after the muted crowd reaction tonight, I don't know if that's a great idea anyway. Beyond that, I don't think it's a big four because I do eliminate Gunter. I would put money on Punk, and my second choice would actually be McIntyre. Don't think Cody's going to win for a couple of reasons, and I hope they don't do that because, one, it's ridiculously redundant. And before we get into the Steve Austin 1-2 years in a row thing, well, not really, because he cheated to win the first time as a heel, and the second time he won as the biggest babyface in the company. It was like the two most completely different back-to-back wins you could possibly have. Whereas if Cody won, it would be a straight repeat of last year, only he enters slightly earlier than 30. Beyond that, WWE gets into this problem where they have these years where they don't know who's going to win, so they just pick insert top guy here. And I don't think anybody else should ever win three of these. And I think if they do Cody this year, you could see a situation in 3 or 4 years where they're like, oh, well, we don't really have anything going on, and let's just have Cody win it. And then he ends up with three of them, and they kind of tarnish that. So I'm against it from that standpoint, too, because I do think that's a strong possibility that could occur later. I lean Punk. I really lean Punk. But I do think with Levesque in charge, there is the possibility that they throw the Drew curveball, and I promise this is not a plug for my show, but 30 years ago this weekend was the 1994 Rumble where two people won, and we are covering that next week, and it would be way too cute by half to just so happen to do that 30 years to the day, but you can't put it past them to do some screwy finish where Punk and Rhodes both win. Again, not in favor of that at all, but I think it's a possibility. So to answer your question, Wade, yeah, they have a lot of paths. They have a lot. I think all of them are logical, which is the biggest thing that I care about. I don't want to see somebody shoehorned in just for the sake of it. Like, you know, Brock winning a couple years ago was just the dumbest thing ever. The other thing that I really hope they don't do is they've really overplayed the number one or number 30 winning over the last 5 years. Like, I think in the last 5 years between the two Rumbles, they've done both tropes three times. So I really, really want them to not do that this year, and I want the winner to be like 15 or 17 or 8. Like, just throw a curveball in that way.
Yeah. Did you like, by the way, on SmackDown tonight, speaking of it, how they did the Tumblr numbers, just kind of, you know, remind us that this is randomized and, you know, storyline-wise, and, you know, the idea that, hey, you don't know where people are going to land, but we know a few people's reactions to the number they got.
I've been looking for a place to bring that up. I love the Tumblr, like I always did, and I always thought that was like one of the best parts of the earlier Rumbles, and they've really gotten away from it. I they bring it back every now and again. But I was curious. I didn't watch Raw yet. Did they do that on Raw?
No.
Okay, good, because I was going to say that, and that's not fair. But anyway, what was the point of having Rock's daughter there if no NXT people were going to pick their number? What the hell was the point of that?
To teach her how the Tumblr works for future years? I don't know. Good question. Good question.
So moving on, though, I really enjoyed that. The one thing, though, that I'll bring up, and this is part of why I wanted to talk about it. Do you remember in past years where people would either be upset or happy with their number, and then the actual Rumble would happen, and it didn't correlate to where they were?
I don't remember that happening, but it doesn't mean it hasn't, for sure. I could have forgotten.
Like, I wish I could remember who it was, but there's somebody one year who's, like, super excited about their number, and they were, like, number 8.
Yep.
Like, there's no reason for that, so I hope they pay attention to that tomorrow. But with that said, the only person that was happy with their selection was Bobby Lashley, and everybody else was negative. So that could be, like, their workaround. The most negative was Bayley, but I actually think she might win. So I don't know if she'll be that early. So maybe she's, like, 12 or something. I don't know. But it was interesting that, again, there was only one person happy with their number, and it happened to be Lashley, where I guess even if they screw it up, you could make the case that it's Lashley and he wants to beat people up, so he was happy regardless of where he was.
The thing. Like, Mike, I was just having fun with it, and so I said it looked like Lashley's number 11 based on his facial reactions, just kind of somewhere in the middle of 10. I didn't see it as a real strong reaction either way. And Dawkins, I think, kind of reacted in a certain way that wasn't like, oh, you're lucky, but also not you're devastated. It's sort of like, something to think about, maybe a little earlier than later. Not ideal, but you got it. Like, that was my...
Hang on. Montez Ford literally said, good job, Bobby.
Oh, yeah. But was like that...
He accomplished something by pulling a ball out of a pit.
Yeah, so I was going to say, like, what was that meant to be? So it's possible they were all instructed not to react too strongly because they haven't decided the order yet, and they're just doing this for show. Although, I mean, Bayley, some people showed more emotion than they should have if that was the case.
Bayley and somebody, not Santos, but and not R-Truth. Whoever the other person was also very negative. Jimmy. Bayley were the two that, like, if they're in the top 5, it'll make sense. And actually, Jimmy would make sense to be early.
The Jimmy reaction, I thought the implication of that was I'm 1, 2, or 3.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yep. Now that and that was like, I think it was the last one on the show. And you know what? Paul gave Jimmy I could see Jimmy being one of the stories of the match. He lasts a long time. They planted the seed that, you know, there's a game plan and a mission that Paul instilled in him to inspire him, and they can tell that story so that when he gets eliminated by whomever, it'll be, you know, a moment, and it wouldn't have been as much of a moment without the segment with Paul tonight.
Actually, it gives me two ideas. First of all, you said whomever. You mean when Jay super kicks him and eliminates him, right? Because that's clearly what...
that would make sense.
With that said, though, you bringing up the facial expression of him being like 1, 2, 3 and being one of the stories of the Rumble, him and Jay should both be in the top 5 and last a long time. That would be cool. That would be a cool idea.
Yeah. All right. I think Deke signed off, so we will go to Joe in New York next. Joe, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about tonight's show?
Good evening, guys. I got a lot to say about this Vince McMahon situation. We shouldn't really be shocked at some of the, I mean, we're definitely shocked by the the level of the gruesomeness of it. But I mean, let's look at something that's not talked about a lot. But if you follow the business like we have for 30 years, you know it was out there. Vince McMahon, he talked about it one time with the Playboy magazine. He was molested as a child. And
yeah. And
if you don't get psychological help for that, you're going to have problems. And I don't think Vince ever went to a psychiatrist and talked about it or did any kind of things that you need to do when you have that kind of issue. I mean, it was talked about very little for a short period of time. But, and, you know, I mean, look at some of the storylines he did with Trish Stratus. One week he dumped her in mud. The next week he had her bark like a dog and strip, right? And then even on his DVD, they talked about a storyline that was dropped. He wanted to have an incest with Stephanie McMahon. I mean, and he had the whole Kiss My Ass Club thing in the early 2000s. And he did that for weeks. He started with William Regal, Jim Ross, and then all kinds of wrestlers, Shane McMahon, Shawn Michaels. Yeah. I mean, they did this for weeks. I mean, that's not somebody who's stable. And if you look at one other thing too, I mean, I blame the family. I don't give the McMahon family a pass at all, because what's going on with Vince? If you look at the thumbnails you see online of him with the mustache and the dark hair, and I mean, the guy's 78 years old. He doesn't look like, you know, who's looking out for this guy as far as, like, you know, when people get old, sometimes they lose, you know, mental illness or whatever. Somebody's got to be looking out for him. And I was wondering when Linda McMahon went working for Washington, D.C. for Trump, I said, Vince is home all by himself at night. You know, Vince is not staying home at night, you know, in an empty house. So, you know, he's been wild for years. And she stays married to him because financially it's probably just more beneficial to her. But, I mean, they're not innocent, the family. They're not innocent. They know a lot of this stuff. And I would love to see Netflix pull the plug on this deal, because it hasn't started yet, and pull out a morals clause, because the only thing that's going to hurt that family is losing big time money and losing a deal like that. Your thoughts?
Alex?
I don't want them to lose the Netflix clause deal.
Yeah.
I don't want
that
to happen.
Yeah.
As far as his appearance, Vince lately looks like he's cosplaying Walt Disney.
Yeah, he does. Yep.
Yeah, that's what it reminds me of. I agree with you. We talked about it a little bit earlier. The family, to an extent, is definitely complicit, I guess is the best way to put it. I just don't know to what extent. I think they knew, but I don't know how much they helped. Certainly, I highly doubt that Stephanie or Levesque facilitated this type of behavior. I mean, not to the extent that, you know, John Laurinaitis did, or maybe some others that were not named in the lawsuit, but whose names will come up once the NDA is lifted and the text messages get leaked. I think we'll have a clearer understanding. But, I mean, you're right. Hitting them in the pockets is what's gonna hurt the most. But at the end of the day, I don't think this is anywhere close to the end of this. And I truly believe we're probably closer to the beginning. And we'll see how many people come forward and how much that does impact the financial side of Vince. And I don't think it'll impact the financial sides of Stephanie or Paul Levesque or Linda, but definitely Vince.
I mean, people are going to be waiting for other things to surface of a culture that expanded beyond Vince's privilege and depravity into other areas, be it famous wrestlers or people you would least expect who were participating or enabling or doing something completely separate. And that's going to be speculated about. But I don't think that's going to be the case. I mean, like, I think Vince McMahon is not the tip of the iceberg. He is the iceberg. I haven't heard, doesn't mean it's not true, that there isn't things out there, but I haven't heard anything credible beyond, obviously, like extramarital affairs or kinks and stuff like that. I mean, they're just, you can't help but have people share that stuff with you whether you want or not sometimes over the years. But, I mean, the idea of hiring somebody in a vulnerable situation and the mind effing of what went on in that whole dynamic from 2019 to 2022 with Vince and, you know, sharing videos of her with the ring crew, offering videos, guilting her if she doesn't send one because it's important to get this guy to sign. I mean, it's just like, no, I will be shocked and appalled if there's anything approaching this that's still out there. And I don't think what we've seen with Vince as it now stands, even if there was some looking the other way, is enough to jeopardize sponsorships and Netflix, because corporations will take stands for PR reasons, but there's still a lot of money to be made. And even if there's some scandalous aspects of this, there will be people who pay a price at a mid-level, and the people with the most power will, you know, and we've seen with Vince McMahon, it can't last forever, but if it's not to the degree that Vince did, people will be protected. There'll be some sacrificial lambs, so to speak, and corporations will go on trying to make money and grow and benefit their stockholders and their owners. So I don't see my prediction right now, Joe, is we're not going to see a ripple effect that's negative on WWE, in part because Vince resigned tonight. But there's no way I can rule it out at all. But, you know, John Laurinaitis and Kevin Dunn, I mean, there's people who have been in Vince's inner circle who aren't around anymore. You know, I mean, there's people who have been identified as being close to Vince who are going to fear or be concerned that there's going to be assumptions that they were part of this sort of lifestyle over the years. And I don't think it's fair or even decent to draw those conclusions that they did anything lurid and scandalous. But at the same time, I believe most of them knew some of the stuff was going on, and they've got to account for that in their mind. You know, they've got to live with themselves for that. You know, what level of standing up to Vince was there, and do they regret not taking more action or trying to stop some things that were going on? But I also think Vince, as he got older, got more reckless. And I think when he was younger, it was it's an affair and that's just a thing that happens. It's not my business. And I think that grew into something more. And we're seeing that in, you know, as something in his 70s that came up.
Yeah. And let me just say, NDAs are one of the biggest problems in this country right now, because to me, all it is a legal loophole for rich people to do what they want and then hide behind the law. And I think that's a lot of bullshit, yeah, because there's people that are just doing wrong things, knowing they're doing the wrong things, and because somebody signs their name to a piece of paper, they're immune from prosecution? I don't think so. I don't know what's going on, but that's something we got to fix with the country. But that's what that is. But as to the Royal Rumble, I think Hulk Hogan's got a 20% chance of showing up, if I had to put a number on it.
Wow.
But, you know, at the end of the day with him, you know, when I think of him, every time you say, you know, he's going to be downplayed, and I agree with that, he will be, but you know when he's going to be loved again, believe it or not, 10, 20 years, whenever the day comes when he passes, it's going to be Hulkamania runs wild. It's going to be like when Michael Jackson died. Everybody played his music. He's going to be loved that day. You know, he's not going to be around to see it, obviously, but I think that's the next time he's going to get the big, 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 because I think that's just, there's a whole generation and a half of people, like 30 years of people that are just going to go back to their childhood or when they were growing up or when they became a fan, you know, and I just think that's when that's going to be, you know. You know, at the end of the day, he can't do anything. He's 70 years old. He had major back surgery, I think. He's on the table for like 6 hours. So he's so limited what he could do anyway. I don't think, you know, I don't think he wants to do anything. I don't think he's as stupid as Ric Flair, where, you know, he wants to jeopardize his next 10, 15, 20 years. You know, I don't think he wants to do something like that. You know, Flair, unfortunately, I don't think he cares one way or the other, so.
I don't think in Hulk Hogan's obituary the lead is going to be the racist things he said, but I think it mm-hmm. will be in the story. I don't think it's something that any, you know, good reporter or major newspaper is going to leave out. I mean, I think it's a significant chapter, but I don't know that it will be the lead, and I'm not sure it should be with him. I think with Vince McMahon, the lead is going to be resigning under scandal, and we don't even know where this goes. I mean, more details come out, maybe something criminal. I mean, there was a grand jury and a search warrant at Vince's home. I mean, this is a story that still is moving, and Vince is going to fight it, and maybe he's going to not just dispute, but dispel through evidence some things that he's accused of. I don't know how he will disprove some of these allegations, but if you can in any way chip away at the integrity or credibility of Janelle Grant, you know, I mean, that's what he's going to be searching to do if he cares enough to try to rehab his reputation. But there comes a point where, like, are you trying to put out the fire in a house that's already burned down except for, you know, the corner of a living room? I mean, like, why even bother?
Right.
Like, Vince's reputation is so hurt. What does he think he's going to gain at this point by trying to say, well, there's a couple things here that were exaggerated? I mean, there's just a preponderance of evidence and a pattern. So I just don't see it. Alex, anything you want to jump in with?
There's somebody he's friends with that's literally doing the thing that you're talking about right now.
Yeah.
And just paid a whole bunch of money. So it wouldn't shock me to see him do that at all.
The side-by-side headlines of Donald Trump and Vince McMahon right now are remarkable. And, I mean, I've talked to somebody years ago in WWE who just was witness to those two talking on the phone a lot before Trump was president, but I believe while he was running. And that might have extended into his presidency. Those two are real similar. And it is a remarkable moment to see those two next to each other on CNN.com as a headline. And Vince would be getting more publicity if not for what Trump is, you know, with the jury verdict today with Trump. But, yeah, those are two almost exact same age, similar stories, strange relationships with their fathers. There's all kinds of similarities between the two of them in ways that are coming to light. Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
And, you know, just two more things I got to say. Vince, thing with Vince McMahon being the founder, that's such bullcrap because his grandfather was the founder, not even his father, his grandfather. The company was already was already like 40 years old when Vince took it over. So I understand that they like to say that narrative, but that's not even true. And the other thing is, when you're talking about obituaries, I always said to myself, Vince McMahon's obituary should have said, well, up until this day today, should have said, not the greatest father, not the greatest husband, the greatest wrestling promoter in the history of wrestling. Now that's gone, so I don't know what you put, but that's what it should have been because that's what he was. And he would have hated that because he hates to think he's a wrestling promoter, but that's what he was, and that's who he is. And now he ruined that, so I don't know what you do with him. It's just a guy who – it's like a guy who unfortunately has mental illness and came off his medicine because he just went downhill, and it's tumbling, and his family didn't stop it. And, you know, I don't know. It's just a sad ending because it's just a downward spiral.
The inventor of WrestleMania and the head of several boom periods for professional wrestling who led the charge, the inevitable growth of pro wrestling on a national scale after the territorial days and took the lead in doing that and went through ups and downs, who resigned amidst sex trafficking and abuse allegations after years of paying hush money to other victims and alleged victims is the lead in, you know, some form or fashion, hopefully not one long run on sentence like that if you're a good writer. But both of those need to be in the lead paragraph. You know, he can be given for context. I don't say credit, but it should be acknowledged that early why he's famous. And it is leading the way for the natural expansion of professional wrestling, inventing essentially WrestleMania, and overcoming, you know, multiple setbacks and having multiple boom periods. That can be paragraph two, but paragraph one should include why he's famous and then what he did to end his tenure as a public figure in in shame, and a lot of people feeling disgust for him and who it turned out he turned into and in some ways always was. Yeah, I mean, but yeah, of course you're going to say why he's famous and why you're putting a story on in a newspaper or website about him. I mean, that you're going to do that, but it's not going to be celebrated the way that it might have been framed otherwise. That's gone. And, you know, different people are in different degrees of that. Sometimes celebrate the art, not the artist. But you can get to a point where that's not done. You know, nobody's going to celebrate Harvey Weinstein's movies in the lead. And, you know, the word, the disgraced wrestling promoter, Vince McMahon, went into seclusion during the final years of his life after riding high, selling his company for billions and cashing out after an amazing run, taking wrestling national into heights internationally. I'd never been seen with a ultra-successful WrestleMania series, but resigned in shame and left public life at that point. I don't know if he leaves public life. I'm projecting ahead a little bit here. But, yeah, I mean, there's different ways it's going to be written. There's different ways it could be written, but at this point, yeah, there's no – if it was just Rita Chatterton and a couple affairs he paid off, that wouldn't have been in the lead paragraph. It would have been a footnote. And that's changed.
Yes, definitely. One final question. What is the percentage that Roman loses the title at the Rumble? 20%, 30%, 40%? I think it's under 50.
I mean, I don't want to take away the suspense from people, but I think it's less than 5% myself.
Okay.
Roman's not going to – that title reign isn't that long, and you're not going to spend it on any of those three. Whoever beats Roman, it's a massive moment they've been building to for years. And as popular as Randy Orton is right now, and as convenient as it would be to have Roman Rock without a title on the line, just sort of the head of the table thing, and you've got a built-in match with Cody and Randy because of their history and the legacy, they haven't talked a lot about that. And it was a relatively brief moment in time in WWE history, quite frankly, as Jim Ross would say. And they're not going to give it AJ Styles or LA Knight to win over Reigns. So, I mean... Say that again?
You think Roman and Rock is for the title at Mania?
I am not ruling it out, but I think it's going to be Cody, Roman, one-on-one, but I genuinely don't know. I don't think the process creatively – I have reason to believe the process creatively has not been as smooth as other situations like this, and it has left me genuinely not sure – what the final call will be tomorrow in terms of setting the path to WrestleMania.
Have a good night, Reed. Thank you for taking the call. Everybody go VIP.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks. I'm using my words carefully there, Alex, because I don't want to do spoilers and I genuinely don't know, but I have reason to believe it's not, it hasn't been set in stone for weeks and some things were still being worked out. So I won't say I'll generally be surprised because I think there's, you know, a small handful of options and I think there's multiple good options. I think Cody Roman should headline WrestleMania this year and I think Rock should not get in the way of that. And I think as much as people go, well, you have to have Rock and Roman at WrestleMania. I don't know. I think WWE's got a good thing going with Cody right now. And I think Rock has already distracted from something that deserved to be the centerpiece and focus of the road to WrestleMania. And I hope they find a way to write themselves into on a different path where Rock doesn't get in the way of Cody Roman one-on-one. That would be my pitch.
So I won't spoil WrestleMania, but I will spoil the Royal Rumble tomorrow. Roman Reigns is going to pin AJ Styles definitively and remain champion. I have never been more certain of anything.
I was going to say the less than 5% doesn't mean I think there's a chance it's 3 or 4% or 5. I'm just saying less than 5 as my you can read into that what you want. But that less than 5 can mean 0. Yes.
Of all of the things we've assigned percentages to tonight, Roman
yes.
losing title is the lowest of all of them.
But if you're out there and you've talked yourself into thinking it might happen and it's going to add suspense to the match, I mean, never say never.
Sure. As far as Rock Roman goes, I don't agree with you at all. I think you do it before you can't. But the Netflix thing has had me thinking, is it possible that the first thing that's aired on Netflix is quote unquote Monday Night Raw, but not really Monday Night Raw? And it's really, in reality, a one-match, one-hour show where it's 30 minutes of video packages and Rock versus Roman. Is that, like, completely crazy?
No, I love it. I love it. I do. Like, yeah.
That's just, to me, that's, like, it's almost too perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like that a lot more than the idea of doing it in Australia, which I think is the dumbest idea ever.
You don't want to get up at 4:30 a.m. to see the dream match people have been talking about for years?
No.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, I hate that idea. Like, if you're going to do anything there, do a contract signing or something.
Yeah.
I mean, that show's going to be interesting anyway, because now with the injury to Seth, and Roman's not advertised, you know, I wouldn't read too much into it. The reason I don't have tickets to the Rumble tomorrow is because he wasn't advertised originally, and by the time he got added, I just didn't want to pay for them.
Mm-hmm.
True story, that's the only reason I'm not going. But, so I wouldn't read too much into it, but as of now, with neither one of those two being on the card, it makes it very interesting what the headline for that show is. So I make the assumption it'll be Rhea defending the women's title against somebody, and maybe you get a really big Gunter Intercontinental title defense. But it's going to be interesting to see how they book that show without a major title match. I know they have the Chamber and all that kind of stuff, but it'll be interesting to see what direction they go if they do want to go with like a traditional one-on-one main event.
I'm intrigued by your Netflix idea. I really genuinely have an array of different paths and options. I resent in that the idea that Rock is going to come in and get in the way of whatever story would have been told if Rock didn't come in and have a particular set of ideas of what works for Rock and what he wants to do. And I don't know the level of internal angst that is going on between people who see Rock as the be-all, end-all. And if we got him, we got to give him exactly what he wants and let him do it his way. And how people who have been invested in telling a completely different story with a very specific timetable and idea of crowning Cody and maximizing that crowd pop and not having it seem secondary to something else, so that Cody can be on TV every week for you as a valuable player for years to come. I mean, I think there's a lot going on. And I think Cody's been in a difficult position when asked about this publicly, how to talk about it and how to frame it and, you know, not put heat on Rock like, you know, CM Punk did back in the day. Oh, who's this guy? I think he's taking my spot to main event WrestleMania. He's going to be diplomatic about it. But, I mean, the idea was Cody's going to win the Rumble or the Chamber and beat Roman at WrestleMania if all was going well and they still were happy with Cody, and I think they should be. And I don't even have 100% certainty that was the plan, but I mean, I'm pretty sure that's what they had in mind when they said we can get another year out of this and have another year of a chase and we've got things to do with Roman afterwards. So I still like Cody beating Roman and I like Rock against Roman later. And I don't think it has to be WrestleMania, but I think Rock wants it to be. And I get it. So we'll see. I think more will be known over time.
The only thing I worry about waiting with the Rock thing is that I bring up the Netflix idea. There's a strong possibility Roman's not heel anymore by that point, which would make things weird.
So maybe that's the moment you turn Roman face.
That's what I mean, is that could end up being part of this too.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with that is I don't know, another year waiting on Rock is, I don't know. There's a lot that goes into it. I personally would be fine with it if Cody ends up in the spot. I don't want him to win the Rumble, though. I want them to come up with something different than that. I just don't want the repeat nature of it. It would just bother me. Like, I know I picked Punk, but in the back of my head, I have this bad feeling Cody comes in number one and just wins, and I would hate that. Like, that's, like, the one thing they could do tomorrow that would just piss me off. Like, I would not care for that at all.
Yeah.
Anyway, with that said, I'm also not opposed to it being Cody and him just, you know, losing again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm cool with that, too.
No, why? Because you don't like Cody, or you just think it's a good story? Keep the chase on. Like, elaborate.
Because I don't think that we are 2.5 months away, 3 months away from Roman's world being shattered, and I think that's when he should lose the title.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he still has Solo and Jimmy, and they could speed all that up. But I think if he wins again and then things start to unravel and you either do a draft or something where Cody ends up with a title shot at SummerSlam, and somewhere between Mania and SummerSlam, all the pieces of the puzzle have started to come apart, mm-hmm. and Roman literally has to wrestle this guy by himself, and he's unsure of himself. Paul Heyman left, and it's just this broken shell of Roman, and Cody just kicks his ass. Like, what they should have done at Starrcade 97, like, it's just this shell of Roman, this once dominant champion, and Cody just destroys him. Like, I mean, like, 7 minutes just kills him and wins the title, big celebration, and then Roman is just left there reflecting on all of his choices, and then he's gone. And then he comes back and has to explain it all as this Solo figure, perhaps going after Solo Sikoa. Like, I think that's a better story, and I don't know if they can get there in 10 weeks or whatever the hell it is.
The whole road to WrestleMania, I mean, it's like Colin Gray said, starts tonight. Well, it starts tomorrow, but I mean, tonight is, you know, setting the final pieces in place for it and giving the final clues and hints and all that. Speaking of which, let's just run down some things from SmackDown here, since so much of the conversation has been, you know, understandably and primarily focused on the big topics, Vince McMahon's resignation and scandal, and what's going to happen at the Royal Rumble in the two major matches that were talked about tonight, the Rumble itself and the four-way. First, I want to get your thoughts on the end of the Kevin Patrick era, Alex. Michael Cole in for Kevin Patrick. Kevin Patrick relieved of his duties, not due to my understanding, any scandal, just a feeling that they had invested a lot in him and he wasn't quite where they needed him to be. He was well-liked, and I think some people feel bad it didn't work out.
I mean, it is what it is. It's one of those situations where and you know it as a Vikings fan, but it's when you draft a guy in the second round and you give him every opportunity to be an impact player, and it just never happens. Like, he works hard, he's just not good enough. And so the day comes where you just, you know, you're not picking up his fifth-year option or you're not renewing his contract. And it's like, there's no hard feelings or anything, and maybe the team was successful around him, but you just got to go, dude. And that's kind of what it was with him. He just never improved. Like, he came in as a prospect and just never got past that, despite multiple opportunities to do so and despite them giving him a mentor and everything else. It was interesting that you bring that up. Did you catch that Cole said this is one night only for him on SmackDown at the top of the show?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, he mentioned he was – they didn't make any mention of Kevin Patrick. But he did say it was a one-time thing. And that could have just been a throwaway line or, you know, there's not somebody in his ear anymore. Michael Cole's just talking, whatever. But I did think it was interesting that he did go out of his way to say that.
Yeah. So I don't know if Vic Joseph returns, if Mauro Ranallo returns, if they're going to hire some. I mean, it's not like Kevin Dunn was a guy who was, you know, largely behind. We need somebody who did legit sports, and we want to have somebody who, you know, has resume bullet points from ESPN or some major league. Either, and then they bring people in who don't know anything about wrestling, and it's just everyone else is just like, no, we don't want to deal with this. And they had to deal with that twice. I mean, Jimmy Smith knew, you know, adapted a little bit more, but there were some embarrassing moments that drove Corey Graves crazy, and Adnan Burke obviously was a disaster from the start. But, hey, he saw Demolition in 1991 at the house show, and it was a fun night. Thank you. Yes, you're a big-time fan, totally ready to take over and anchor a three-hour live broadcast with that knowledge base. That type of thing I don't think is going to happen, unless that's a thing that Endeavor executives are into. And, you know, we're not going to, you know, right now Vince isn't there. And Paul Levesque should be the guy making all of these decisions, make final decisions, but maybe there's some nephew who's called some college baseball games that somebody at Endeavor thinks is a great fit, and it's going to be foisted upon everybody a week from tonight. I don't know. I don't know. You shouldn't put somebody experimental on Fox, on, you know, hosting SmackDown. So hopefully it's somebody who really knows what they're doing and knows the product and is ready to go. And Mauro Ranallo and Vic Joseph, and Mauro's been keeping up on the product, and you know, Vic Joseph is there. Those are, you know, some good choices. So we'll see. I don't know. I don't really know who else are can. Have you heard speculation about others at all?
No. I do want to mention, though, if Paul Levesque is listening, I am free on Friday nights, and I know the product. So if you're looking for somebody, I will throw my hat in the ring for that. Beyond that, though, what was the name of the guy they tried to poach from UFC like 20 years ago? Is he still doing stuff?
Mike Goldberg? Yeah. No. He was doing not UFC, but the other Bellator for a while. Yeah. I guess he could bring him in. I don't know. I think he's a little past his freshness.
No. I haven't heard it. Again, I've heard Mauro Ranallo and Vic Joseph. Vic Joseph is the most logical because he already works there, right?
Yeah.
He's in NXT.
NXT, yeah.
Yeah, that's the most logical. They could even just swap him and Kevin Patrick. Like, I don't know if anybody would notice. But the only other names that come to mind is if they wanted to bring back the robot guy that I think he's in TNA now. Whoa.
Oh, yeah. Yep, Tom Phillips.
Yeah.
Yep, Tom Hannafin. Yep.
Yeah, they could do something like that, or they could go with obviously they won't go after like a Mike Tenay, but interestingly enough, there is a certain person who worked there for a long time whose contract is expiring, and I am not saying it's a good idea, but Jim Ross sounds like he's going to be available relatively soon.
That would be quite. Of course, the politics of Jim Ross and Paul Levesque, and that being Paul Levesque, because, you know, Patterson was a Rock guy, and Ross was an Austin guy, and Triple H resented, you know, both a little bit, that, you know, they weren't his guys. And so, but, you know, that'd be interesting. That'd be really interesting, even if it was just, you know, from now until WrestleMania.
Yeah.
But you need a third guy, too. I mean, you need a third guy in the booth.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they could always bring back Jonathan Coachman.
You know, you're right. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I don't know who he's friends with who's still there. Byron Saxton doesn't do much anymore, but, I mean, he's sat at that table enough if they needed to put someone there. Anyway. It's late. We speculated enough. I'm eager though. I'm curious. That I don't consider a spoiler. If I hear anything, I guess if it's Jim Ross and it's a surprise, that'd be a spoiler. But if it's not that, I'll try to dig up some info on that. So Eladio Carrion, a Latin Grammy award winning recording artist, comes out and makes a little appearance and talks about Orton being a good friend of his, and then that led to AJ Styles and LA Knight coming out for some angles to set up then what would be continued in the main event, which we can cover now too. Solo Sikoa and LA Knight battling one-on-one, AJ coming to ringside and causing a no contest followed by everybody involved. Well, no, all three challengers coming out and getting in a brawl. What do you think of the bookended segments, Alex?
The first one was a whole bunch of nothing happening. That was
very pain by numbers.
It really was, but not only that, but that opening segment made me feel like maybe they started this storyline a week too early. Because, like...
There's nothing left to do.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like what they did last week should have been the go-home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the RKO to Reigns, and, like, that should have been tonight.
Yeah.
So everything tonight felt like extra that we didn't need. I don't know. I didn't care for that. As far as the main event goes, I do not like at all this new trend of Solo Sikoa gets his ass kicked. It's dumb. It is really dumb.
Yeah, it's a lot of it going on.
And having 40-something-year-old LA Knight just dominate him before AJ Styles makes the save is dumb. It's mm-hmm. very dumb, and it's counterproductive, and it is the absolute opposite of what you should be doing with him. And I've been critical of this before in my reports. I don't like, in general, that we have seen Solo, who in my opinion is right next to Gunther. Maybe he ends up behind him, mm-hmm. but one of them is going to be the big heel on one show, and the other one is going to be the big heel on the other show. And these guys are going to have to carry pay-per-views as that top heel with a babyface chasing them. And they've done a good job with Gunther by saving a lot of that stuff. With Solo, we have now seen him wrestle Drew McIntyre, Sheamus, LA Knight, Jey Uso, Sami Zayn, Randy Orton. I'm sure I'm missing a couple people, but he's wrestled all of them on free TV for no reason.
Other than they have 52 weeks of TV to fill a year and they want to put main events out there and they figure they can cleanse him of these losses and non-dominant performances by the time they decide to elevate him. I mean, I'm relaying their mindset. I don't think they're down on him.
Oh, I don't think they're down on him either. I just think it's a mistake, and I think they should be protecting his aura more. Like, mm-hmm. the thing is, like, you have the designated job guy, and he's literally been the designated job guy the entire time the Bloodline's been a thing. Like, if the Usos were going to lose, you could call a mile away that this guy's beating Jimmy. Like, you just knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't understand why tonight, of all nights, you do that. Like, why? Why have him dominate? Like, what difference would that segment and that whole thing, what would have been the difference if you switched out Jimmy and Solo?
Yeah, I don't know. They could have done that. And I don't, yeah, I mean, I'm thinking through. I mean, I guess if they are trying to tell a story with Jimmy being credible to win the Rumble, they don't want to weaken him a day beforehand. But they didn't even do a finish, you know what I mean? So
that's what I mean.
Yeah,
they didn't do a finish anyway, so who cares?
Yeah. All right, Carlito and Santos Escobar with all the cohorts at ringside, Escobar getting a win, Electra Lopez showing up. Any thoughts on that, Alex?
Really like Santos. Really, really like the renewed push he's gotten. It's a shame that they let him do absolutely nothing for a year on the main roster before they figured out how to use him. I've loved everything they've done with him lately. He's one of my favorite parts of the show. And on top of that, I think the repackaging of Angel and Humberto has been awesome. They are significantly better as his heavies than the joke that was Wild and Del Toro.
Yeah.
And I really hope they don't fall into the same trap and define those guys down as just guys to get beat up and stuff like that. I think they've done a good job so far. With all of that said, I didn't like the actual match at all. I thought they built that up for a while and had a story going into it. And the match kind of sucked. Like, Carlito dominated a good portion of it, and then when Escobar got to do offense, it was rest holds, which isn't what he's known for.
Mm-hmm.
So it just felt like a huge letdown that they built to this, and clearly it's not over. We're probably going to get some weird eight-person thing with them now that they introduced Electra Lopez. So I assume we'll get, like I said, some weird eight-person tag at some point.
Yeah.
And probably Escobar Mysterio at WrestleMania, I would imagine. But it was just a letdown, especially with how well they've been doing with Escobar lately. It was just a letdown.
By the way, I'm entering Rey Mysterio's name as the person I'd be most surprised of all the prominent names involved in some scandal that comes out. That he would be the one who breaks the most hearts.
For sure.
As people irresponsibly speculate about things, I just want to say the guy who would break the most hearts if this leads to some, you know, just spilling of all things that, yeah. I shouldn't even, you know, joke about it being like a game, like who would break your heart the most if you found out they were participating in this stuff. Cause like Brock is not a particularly big surprise. I mean, you know, we knew he and Lesnar and Vince, you know, flew together on their jet and had fun and were really close. And Brock walked out, you know, on SmackDown for a while the night that he found out Vince was ousted and all this was going on. I mean, so anyway, I was just trying to think like when people are going, oh God, are there more shoes to drop, so to speak. And I'm just like, who would be the one who surprised people the most? And when you said Ray's name, I'm like, that would be the guy who it would just be devastating for so many people.
Yeah, and they're not linked enough to where, like, that would be majorly surprising because, you know what I mean? Like, I don't remember ever hearing stories of them being particularly close.
That's a thing, yeah. And, I mean, I'm being sort of silly. I don't want to belabor the point, but I was like, that's the guy who would shock people the most. Like, if you're looking for the person on the roster who's been around a long time, could have been around long enough to be part of something. But I'm genuinely saying I would be surprised, and I think most people would be heartbroken because people just feel such affection for him in the fan base. All right. Oh, yeah.
There's two others that are more likely, but would be super surprising, but we'll see.
Yeah. I don't want to get into, because people will read in. Anyone who's known to be flying on Vince's jet regularly. Oh God, who's the guy who hung out with Trump and flew people to his island for, I can't think of the guy.
Epstein.
Yeah. Like, it's sort of this Epstein thing, like, oh, you better explain yourself. You were on Vince's jet. You were really tight with him. Do you have, like, you know, that type of thing is, so if I was one of those people, I'd just like, God, now I'm going to have to, guilt by association, you know, because Vince has just such a scandal out of his lifestyle. And certainly that chapter in particular that's now come out, there's a lot of people are not thrilled with what, you know, what might be speculation. But fortunately, you know, if you're innocent, then I think this stuff will dissipate pretty quickly. But if you are guilty, stuff's gonna probably, well, I shouldn't say probably, some stuff's gonna come out then. People are going to want a clean house. You know, people are going to expect there to be, and people are going to, who know, aren't going to want to be seen as enabling those secrets to not, those people not to be held accountable. Like, I think there's going to be a little bit more of that. I mean, I've gotten emails from people just saying, we need a house cleaning. We need a real, you know, independent internal investigation to find out what really was going on and who knew what when. So we'll see. Anyway, I'm sidetracked. I wanted to shift to SmackDown and all that stuff. Katana Chance and Kaden Carter losing the tag titles to Kabuki Warriors in about 9 minutes. Alex, what do you think of the match? What do you think of the decision to switch the belts?
Really good. Title change was pretty certain to happen. Just to kind of play into the Bayley thing tomorrow. It's part of the reason I think she might win. But I was really impressed. I hadn't seen them work before. I don't catch Raw all the time. And if I'm not mistaken, this was their first appearance on SmackDown. But I really like Carter. She was really good. I think she has, like, real singles potential down the road. And I was shocked that they gave them as much as they did. And it was even though they lost, like, that was a cool little showcase. They got to do all their little spots and – for somebody who hadn't seen them before, like, I got pretty familiar with them. I thought that was a really good idea. It was a good 10-minute match, you know, with the break in between, so, you know, 7.5 minutes, whatever it was. But I thought they did a really good job. I thought they highlighted the losing team well and still accomplished what they wanted to with getting the belts to, I don't want to say a more credible team, but getting the belts to a team that can further a story as opposed to just hold them.
Okay. I will move to the – oh, we talked about that. Good. Okay, so we had the Lashley segment with a Street Profits and the face-to-face, not a match, led to a fight. What do you make of what they're doing with Lashley and the Profits and the journey and the path that they've taken with them? And do you like the new the Final Testament faction and how they're being presented at this point?
So a couple things. First thing, I felt like that was a bait and switch because I thought they advertised a match.
Yeah. Yep.
So
it was advertised face to face, but I feel like I was expecting a match too, but I felt like that was more my fault than theirs, but I'd have to go back and see how they framed it.
Oh, okay. I thought for sure they said it's a match. So maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, I don't know with the Street Profits and Lashley, and the reason that I don't know is because they don't know either. Like,
yeah,
no one involved in that has any idea what the hell is going on. And if they did know, something happened that caused it to go off the rails, and now they have no idea. And the interesting thing about this whole feud and setting it up is it's kind of weird booking. I don't know if either side of this can recover from losing. Like, if one of the two sides of this comes out of the feud losing, where do they go from there? Like, unless the idea is to have Lashley and the Profits lose, and then maybe they break up, and that's your way to get Montez as a singles heel,
yeah, yeah,
something.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only really logical way, because you can't do it across an AOP either. The start and stops that guy's had, if this doesn't work, he's dead. Like, he's done.
Yeah.
So it's an odd booking decision, because you can't – it's hard to tell what you do, again, unless they're totally cool with Cross just being dead and buried and then going with AOP as a tag team or something. Or, again, they're just going to break up the other side. Like, unless that's the plan, I don't know what you do. Beyond that, interesting thing about Cross, every year we have a guy in the Rumble that we don't expect who eliminates a few people, and it's like, oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
My pick for that this year is Cross. I have a feeling they could do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Where he eliminates like four or five people and lasts longer than you anticipate. Maybe he ends up getting dumped by Lashley or something, but or vice versa. But I think that's a possibility that they could try to reestablish him in that way. Their entrance is cool, but unfortunately, I've seen the Cross act one too many times, and for as cool as the entrance is, well, it's really all he's got. So. It better be.
How about the Austin Theory Carmelo Hayes match with Trick Williams showing up at the end?
Oh, like what happened? Like the first one was so good until the botch at the end. And then that thing tonight was just, it was 7 minutes with a break in between. They had a couple of nice spots, but they never really like got into a rhythm. And then you just have, you know, Trick show up for no reason. Like I really like Theory, and the few times I've seen Carmelo Hayes, I think he does some cool stuff, and he could be like a super interesting like upper mid carder eventually. But I don't know, man. I just thought that was a mess. Like with what they booked the first time versus what they booked tonight, I felt like they took five steps backwards.
Yeah. I do you think the Waller Theory pairing has been good for either of them? Because I'm starting to be pretty firm in my opinion. They are too similar and not complementary, and it hasn't worked out.
Here's the thing. I mentioned this when they first brought Waller up, that I wanted them to be friends and to bump into each other all the time and have like a weird bromance where they just complimented each other about how great they looked and how nice their bodies are and stuff. Like just over and over. That's just what I wanted them to do. But I never wanted them to be an actual team. And the reason for that was because of this.
Yeah.
Now they're shoehorned into this thing where Grayson Waller is just Austin Theory's like unnecessary hype man. And Theory has just been treading water for the better part of the last 9 months anyway.
Yeah.
So it just feels weird. Like I feel like it should work, but it doesn't because they're two sides of the same coin, but they're not opposites. It's a weird pairing. Again, I think it would have been better if they had coexisted as guys who didn't feud, didn't team, but they're buddies. Like they bump into each other and it's a weird segment every 2 weeks where they talk about how great their matches were and the other guy's just like, no, but you, that was fantastic. Like, I think that would have been better.
Austin Theory has, in 5 years, I'll put it this way, Austin Theory can tread water for 5 more years and still be 10 years younger than when AJ Styles was signed by WWE. So, you know, I think they are playing long ball with him, but how do you feel about him now compared to 9 months ago in terms of where you were with his potential and where you are now with what you're seeing?
No change. I still, like, if we sat here and had a draft and you told me you could only take people under the age of, you know, pick an arbitrary number, pick however old Gunter is so I can draft
him. Mid-30s.
Yeah. Like, anybody in that age group, I would still draft him top five. Like, the only people I would take ahead of him to build a company around at this point would be Gunter, Solo, MJF, and then after that, I'm probably looking at Theory. Like, that's...
Yeah.
I don't think anything's changed. I wish they had gotten more out of the Cena thing. Like, I've mentioned that before. I think they like to show that shot of him standing over Cena after he beat him. And he should have stuck his foot on his throat and beat him definitively and then stood there over him after, because they really could have played that up. But that's not what they chose to do, and it is what it is. But
yeah.
He's going to need something. And I wonder if the trajectory for him down the road, once he finds himself a little bit, is being a really big time babyface. Like, is he more like Cody Rhodes, where maybe it takes a little bit, but by the time the guy's like 33, 34, he's ready to be a big time babyface. Like, I think that's possible.
And I think WWE fans historically have liked for a lot of the wrestlers to see them go on a journey and sort of quote earn it. And they don't hold it against them if they weren't pushed at the top. I mean, looking at what Cody went through in WWE, there's almost nothing that can happen to you in your 20s that's going to preclude you from being a main event, centerpiece, attraction in your 30s, if you have the talent.
No, and Cody's one example. I mean, hell, Triple H is another example. And, I mean, yeah, Rock turned it around quickly, but that first year was not good.
Yeah, no, it was not. No, it was not. And even Steve Austin, I mean, you know.
That was my next one. Yeah. I mean, like, we're covering him on the show right now, and it's like banging your head against the wall. Like, when are you guys going to do something with this guy? And it's funny because we just watched a pay-per-view, Starcade, and he works with Dustin Rhodes. And Tony Schiavone mentions that these two guys are going to be major stars, and he makes something about like rule WCW or dominate WCW. And we were on the show and it's like, well, he's half right. And I don't think he understands what Austin dominating WCW is really going to mean over the next 10 years, but it's going to happen.
Yes. Yep. Anything else with SmackDown that you want to mention, Alex?
No.
Give a nice pitch for what you and Patrick do. You've talked about it, alluded to it a few times here. I'll preface by saying It is a free show that you can get by searching PW Torch on your podcast app and subscribing to the PW Torch Daily Cast, different show, different host, different theme each day of the week. And you all should be checking it out. I have to be even-handed, but I have a soft spot, of course, for you guys' show. Going through the 30 years ago back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, and I think it's a real distinct show, and it's a real good use of our back issues, too. And you two have great chemistry, and I love you're a WWE guy, and Patrick's an AEW guy, and you're even a SmackDown guy. You're not even a WWE guy in that sense. But there's just some great chemistry there, and I know you guys have fun doing it. So talk about the format and the show, and make your pitch to people, because I think some people who aren't listening will find it one of their destination podcasts each week.
So we do the 90s Passcast, where myself and Patrick Moynihan look back on 30 years ago this week in the PW Torch, and we roll through section by section everything going on. We hit WWF Newswire, WCW Newswire. We break down each pay-per-view as they occur. We watch them and give full reviews. So if you're into other podcasts that do pay-per-view reviews, as long as you check up with us whatever week that it was in the Torch, we do cover that. So like next week on the show, we are doing a full rundown of Royal Rumble 94. It's a really cool time because it's actually when Patrick started watching the product as a little kid. I was still a little young, but these are the tapes my Blockbuster had because I started watching in 96, 97. So obviously what you have at your Blockbuster is heavy 93, 94. So all this stuff is big time memories for me. I really like Rumble 94, so I'm really excited to do that show next week. On top of all that, we have the steroid trial coming up this year. So the beginning of the Vince McMahon controversy arc, if you will, as well as, like I said, WCW, WWF, everybody jumping back and forth, the dawn of ECW in this era, which is really cool because Wade at the time had a lot of, you know, ground floor type stuff with ECW. Like we're in the middle of right now a Torch Talk with Todd Gordon, like right as ECW is about to really kind of become a big deal as we get further into 94 and the Knights of the Line was crossed and things like that. On top of that, you know, the birth of indie wrestlers, and we call them out. Like we just saw the first appearance of Christopher Daniels. We saw the appearance of Terra Rising, who was called a Lex Luger ripoff. You know, we talk about Sabu. It's really cool because we find a way to name those guys that are just popping up in the indies and become major stars later. And, hey, this guy's working an indie show in January of 94 in Massachusetts or something. So it's a really cool look back. And for people who haven't heard things from that time period, everybody talks about the Attitude Era, Ruthless Aggression Era, or even now, you know, 10 years ago, 5 years ago. But 30 years ago is kind of the weird dead period because the business was down. So it's a great time to check us out and listen to that every week on the Daily Cast.
Awesome. Thank you, Alex. Great having you back. Hopefully we can do this again soon.
Yeah, thank you, Wade.
Yeah, really, really fun show here. Maybe that's not the right word for it, but some of it was fun. Some of it was pretty serious, but you know what I mean. Thank you, and we'll talk to all of you next time, and hopefully you'll join Greg Parks on the free post show, everybody, after the Royal Rumble, and then go VIP and check out our VIP exclusive roundtable that we've been doing now for about 20 years after all the Royal Rumbles. PWTorch.com/go VIP to get information and sign up.